Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tracking Connections. This is Aiden.
Hi, I'm John, and today we're with Chris August, who has a lovely website, Chris, K-R-I-S, August.com, celebrating the interconnectedness of life. We got very inspired by Chris's design recently that she submitted to the H Shields Masterclass, and we're like, oh, we really have to talk to Chris. I love what she's doing.
Hey, everyone, Sarah here, and welcome, Chris. We are really happy to have you here with us today. We know that you just completed a design project with using the H Shields principles. We also want to hear just about your background with H Shields and where you started with this work and where it has brought you.
Very happy to be here. I'm excited to be able to talk to you all about my design and what I've been doing with it. H Shields has been with me since Coyote's Guide came out, for sure. And I suppose Kamana came out before then. I think I heard about it through John Gallagher's Herb Mentor. When Herb Mentor first came out, he mentioned that he had been on this project called Kamana, a home naturalist program. And that was exciting to me. My children were young at the time, and I was on a little bit of a sabbatical. I'm a veterinarian. And so I had worked for 7 years as a veterinarian and then stopped practice to have my children, basically moved to Iowa from Arizona with a four-month-old child, and didn't work as a veterinarian for a while there and ended up homeschooling my children. And so I was looking for resources all the time and became interested in herbal medicine at that point as well. But so I found Kamana, and I went partway through the Kamana naturalist program and then started studying herbal medicine. And instead of doing all the animal journals, I did herbal journals, but I did continue all the awareness side of that Kamana. It's split into an awareness track and a journaling, animal plant journaling track. And so I continued on the awareness track. And so that's been kind of a baseline for me going forward. And I shared that with my children. And then the Coyote's Guide came out, I guess, and the whole H Shields program or design, that idea really stuck with me. And as a holistic vet, I dove right into the herbal side of things. And a lot of veterinarians learn acupuncture and Chinese medicine early on. And that didn't really stick with me. That type of medicine, the metaphor of Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, which actually works a little better for me, with all these systems, these medical systems have, you know, they work with nature, they work with wheels and cycles, but they never really felt like mine. They felt like they were coming from a different culture. And so when I started doing the Western, I learned herbal medicine through a Western perspective because I wanted to get to know the herbs as individuals. And the H Shields design just really felt like something that fit with me. You know, these other medical systems have self-care built in, like in Chinese medicine, they have Qigong and Tai Chi and self-care behind the scenes of the medicine. And Ayurveda has yoga and the doshas and all these different parts. And for me, the H Shields fit into that design. Several years ago, a friend of mine, Dr. Lori Doman, and I started the first hands-on course for veterinarians, veterinary herbal medicine. I studied and got a graduate degree in veterinary herbal medicine before that. And when we started this course, I wanted to be able to use this model, this H Shields model, in that course. And so that became our self-care side of that course. And during that time, I took more courses with the H Shields organization, took the Reconnecting Nature and then the Village Building course. And that was all while I was teaching this veterinary herbal medicine course. And so that is another way that I've integrated the H Shields into what I'm doing.
One of the things that really struck me about your design was this recognition. I can't remember the term that you used, but Sarah, you talked about it because your sister also does wildlife rehab and rescue. there's something that happens to people when they kind of burn out in a way. They get oversensitized. And you recognizing that and saying, I want to take care of these people, teach them to take care of themselves, who are taking care of, you know, the wild beings and the pets and things like that. That was one of the things that inspired me so much. Where did that idea come from? And, you know, where have you taken that?
As a veterinarian, I homeschooled my children, and then I went back and started a house call practice that I could do part-time and still be with my children, be available to them. And I went into a hospice and palliative medicine for animals, so end-of-life care. And in hospice for animals, we talk a lot more about compassion fatigue, which is what caregivers of all kinds experience when you just can only give so much. And at some point you exhaust yourself. And I talk about moving that into compassion satisfaction. So we want to look out for burnout. With veterinarians, there is a high level of suicide, partly because it's a difficult profession. Caregiving is part of it, but also the difficulty of working with animals and with people at the same time, people who maybe make different decisions than we would want to, financial struggles, all kinds of different reasons. But I think people who go into veterinary medicine are caring people, and it weighs on them significantly. So I work with veterinarians who especially have gone into the hospice and palliative medicine side of things, and we talk a lot about that. A lot of times those are people actually who've burnt out on emergency medicine or other types of practice and have moved into this slower, gentle way of practicing medicine. And the self-care side of things really fit into with that.
Yeah, I love on your website, Chris, that it says in plain letters, you cannot take care of others without taking care of yourself. It's like not a question, right? I'm curious if you are using nature connection practices as part of the self-care protocol.
Yeah. And so what I've created and started with when I was teaching herbal medicine for veterinarians, we would add self-care. I started with having us do gratitude around the circle when we would start class every day, and then bringing in breathing exercises and even sit spots. We ended up with a building that had a lovely garden. And so I would send the students out to do sit spots. And so I kind of introduced all these little pieces that I learned through Kamana and through maybe Josh Lane's things and all these areas through my own study of Ayurveda and yoga, but just brought in all these little aspects that seem to work nicely with nature connection. So the course that I have, the design, is called Self-Care Through the Cycles of Nature. And it's based very much on the eight shields. We start with an introductory month, which is starting September 1st, 2024. It always starts on September 1st and goes 9 months. We have an introductory month. And then every month after that is we jump on the wheel. And for me, we jump on the wheel in the Southwest in that mid-afternoon time of rest, because the people that I'm getting in my courses need rest. They don't need to be inspired or motivated even. They need to rest before they can move the rest of the way around that wheel. That way I can work with the seasons. It was always on a school schedule as well, so fall into spring, but it just made sense to start us out in the time of rest and healing.
That makes so much sense to me. And so what's next after the rest part?
After that, so we move from the Southwest into the West, and then by then it's November. And so we're moving into celebration. And it's kind of looking at the celebrations coming up of the wintertime, meaningful celebrations, community building, things like that. So part of it is self-care, but there's a little bit of coyote mentoring going on there in that taking care of ourselves, we can also take care of the rest of the community. And I have it labeled as self-care, but what we end up doing is there's definitely some going inward, but some of it is going outward with mindfulness and awareness and, you know, different sensory meditations. And so being able to go out and see the nature, the natural world, It's a way of taking us out of ourselves, out of our own mind and our own problems, and just seeing how we can be with nature and how we are a part of nature. And everything is a cycle. You know, we go through the summer and the busyness, but we don't live in that south, that busy midday time. We need time to rest. We need time to celebrate, time to be grateful and honoring and remembering and moving all around the wheel, and then back around into springtime and inspiration and motivation.
The thing that I love about this is just, it's funny. It's like one of those things that when you see someone else do it, it's like, oh yeah, you don't have to start in the East. You can start wherever you want, you know, but it's one of those little brilliant moments that go, yes, of course, right? We can start anywhere. And yet I know that I get caught in that pattern of sort of always starting in the same place. And so I absolutely love that idea of just recognizing where are we right now? And what's the thing that we're most likely to need? And I loved also your approach to, you know, because you're ending in the South, right? And the South, for those who aren't familiar with the directions, the South is generally the time of the focus and perspiration and kind of intensity. And most of our Western culture has, you know, sort of a propensity to approach the South a little bit too intensely, and it can really take a lot out of us. And so I wonder if you could just reflect a little bit on how you approached that and send people on their way with a new perspective on work.
Right. And that was tricky too, because, you know, it's challenging. And that's another thing that I see with veterinarians are very intense people. They've decided to go through all this university, all this college and studies, and they work hard and they work long hours. And so slowing them down is the hardest part. So hence starting in the Southwest, but then coming back around, we go through inspiration. What inspires you? You know, get people back to a love of animals. What brought you here in the first place? And then motivating with, you know, that same thing, finding ways to orient and maybe schedule your day a little bit differently, schedule breaks into your day. Now that you've learned all these other parts of the wheel, how can you change the way you do things and how can you change your schedule? And then the South, it's the last module of the course. So it's kind of also the celebration and the sending you off into the world. And for me, the South work that I put in there is nature journaling. And so it's again, another kind of coyote way of having people still continue to go out into nature and have that, but they're doing a little bit of work, a little bit of study by going out and journaling a plant or an animal.
Yeah, this is really nice, Chris. I mean, your website reflects all of this, you know, your blogs, your writings. It's all really, really sweet and very inspiring. And I'm really grateful for what you're doing. I wanted to take a minute just for the listeners, because we've been talking about things that the four of us understand that maybe you may not understand. So first of all, Chris is working with what we call the eight shields, which is recognizing that, you know, archetypally, you know, sunrise happens before mid-morning, and there's a feeling in sunrise, there's a feeling at mid-morning, there's a feeling at midday. And we've all kind of recognized that you have to stay hyper-focused to move through the midday when the energy kind of wanes and you got to focus. And in a recent conversation, we were talking about how, you know, the Western world was built on hyper-caffeinated, you know, rational commitment. You know, I got to get through the day, get everything done, right? And that sort of is part of what leads to burnout. But that our body actually, you know, needs to focus sometimes, but then it needs to rest, which is that mid-afternoon time. And then the celebration when we gather to tell our stories in the evening when the sun is going down, and then the remembering and the reflecting in that twilight time, and then going into the dream state, just sort of letting things integrate. And then that pre-dawn returning to inspiration, which is again, that sunrise moment. So in the Northern Hemisphere, so if you're listening from New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, you know, your wheel is not upside down. I say that with all due respect. You know, your Southwest is our Northwest, right? And vice versa. So think about it as the time of day in the Northern Hemisphere. Southwest is that time when we want a catnap, right? It's when all the animals are resting and things are getting quiet, right? There's a a natural rhythm within our body that when we reattune to it, we can be so much more productive. And it seems ironic because we take more time, it feels like we're not being as productive. But when we get back into that natural cycle, Sarah decided to name the masterclass Designing with Natural Cycles, which is like, let's learn to harmonize with natural cycles. It seems like it slows us down. And in some ways it does, but then when we're on task, we're so much more productive, right? We're so much more able and so much more self-aware. So that's the beauty of this, how you applied it to healing and care. It's just very inspiring. And I also want to mention for the readers that Chris keeps talking about Kumana Naturalist Training Program, which is a self-study program that we created way back in the 1980s, and then we published it in the 90s. And it had a few little revisions, but hadn't really been revised. And the science was outdated because science really moved a lot, since 1995. So it's temporarily offline right now. But we want you to know that if you get on our mailing list at Living Connection First, if you're interested in pursuing that naturalist program, we have a whole team working on it right now. Great science editor, Dan Gardoki, Josh Lane, Chris mentioned, he's also part of the team to rewrite, and Sarah, myself, and Aiden, and Arnaud Gagne. So we've got some good people working on it, and our goal is to get it out soon. We don't know when, because we've got a few irons in the fire, but we love that program. We're very committed to it. We know it's helped a lot of people. I think you would probably find the new version adapted for modern times. It hasn't watered down the journey. We're hoping it's more accessible because, with the invention of the internet, right, back in 95, we were barely there. And now things have shifted so much for people. So we're really doing our best to bring it up to date. Be patient. If you're interested in finding out more, you can just get on our mailing list at livingconnectionfirst.net, and we'll take it from there.
I'm really excited about the new iteration of the Kumana Naturalist Training. I'll be looking for that and sharing about it as well. Might be something that my students want to go to the next level with.
So, Chris, we have been talking about this, in the context of veterinarians. But as I understand it, your program is for anyone that wants to participate. Is that right?
Right. It started out for veterinarians because I was teaching veterinarians, and I could see they came to herbal medicine needing a break, needing something new, something fresh, and holistic medicine in general. But as I teach it and as I go through, I now work with wildlife rehabilitators, people that work with animals as well, just because this is my community. And now I have people who have been my clients in my house call business that want to take it. And so it has spread out into the community more so. And it makes sense. The models that I talk about for veterinarians are based on studies done with nurses and medical doctors, anyone doing caregiving. And for me, these things helped me as a mother when my children were young. They helped me caring for my elder father. They helped me with my family, all the things, and my friends. I use it in my everyday life, just these basic principles of I need to take time for myself in order to help other people. And as I age and have problems with illnesses and different things, I realize this is just more and more I need to be really conscious of this. And it's something that I can share from that perspective. And the business part of it as well, it's interesting listening to this podcast because I hear people using the Eight Shields for so many different things in different organizations. And so veterinarians historically have not been the best business people. And the idea of being able to pull something heartfelt into your business model is really wonderful as well. Creating community and communication systems, setting boundaries, all these things that the Eight Shields includes are things that everyone needs, not only veterinarians.
I love that. I always think about Yngwie, who told us that we need to learn to live fully in two worlds, and that's really the time that we're in. We're in the late stage capitalism here. Like, I think we've figured out sort of what the industrial model is capable of, and we've really taken that to an extreme. But this indigenous wisdom and this other way of being, getting to integrate in and figure out how to you know, pay our rent and support our families and all of that by not compromising the energy and the values and the things that, you know, make us really feel connected and make us feel great as human beings. You know, this idea of painting a future and creating a future that where those things are not mutually exclusive is a really inspiring one. And I really appreciate your approach to that. And, you know, it makes me think about when I was teaching music, so much of what made something work or not had very little to do with what we were doing and had to do with how we were doing it and how we were showing up together, right? And that would translate from the practice room all the way out to the stage. And if we weren't conducting ourselves in the right way, you know, conducting ourselves in a connected way and as one, then the audience felt that. And, you know, we would have shows that were sort of lackluster. Whereas on the other hand, when we connected, the audience felt that and you created this massive oneness and this incredible energy. And that word conduct or conduct, right? To conduct electricity, to become the conduit, you know, and it's like, what are we allowing to flow through us? And that requires that we allow something in. It's not just about output, right? There is a flow through. So I'm just wondering about your thoughts on anything I just shared there, but how it's informing your work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, connection is really the key in whether I'm teaching, working with kids, working with animals, working with people and their animals, working with veterinary students, veterinarians. It's all about connecting first before people are even able to listen. I think, you know, I think people can't hear what you're saying unless they know that you're vested in them, that you're interested in the outcome and interested in helping them. Yeah, connection is huge, whether it's between people or with nature, or all those things. And I think we've forgotten how to connect as people, you know, as a society, that ability to connect has been sort of tamped down. And so if we can start that by connecting with nature, then we can learn how to do it, practice on the natural world. And just like people, I think people learn compassion sometimes through their animals, through their pets. And then if that can spread out into the rest of their interactions with others, that can make a big difference.
I love that. You know, I often tell people when they're trying to say, you know, what is this nature connection thing exactly, right? I'm like, well, you know, have you ever had a beloved pet, you know, and they'll say, oh yeah, when I was young, or I've got one right now, you know, and I'll be like, right. You know, that feeling you have with that pet where you're almost like their thoughts are entering your mind and you know, they're hungry before they even show you physical things, and how you're always spot on instinctively when you have that connection with them. Oh, I think my dog is waiting to come in the house, and you go to the door. And just as you get there, the dog trots to the door, you know, those kinds of things. I said, that's connection right there. You know, and we might have it with people, but it's interesting in modern times, people mostly experience that with their pets because they've had less than connective, satisfying experiences with the humans, right? And I just love that pets are showing us the way to connection, you know, and they have been obviously for a long time, but I'm like, okay, now imagine that you go out on the land and you have a place that you go to. My late mentor, Tom Brown, would call it a sit area, you know, and when we're working with children, we started calling it a sit spot. But that this idea of, okay, well, if I build relationships with a place on the land, similarly, intentionally, like I have with my pet, all of a sudden, all this new connection opens up and there's even more nourishment that can come through. I wonder if you know, are you able to convey that to people, you know, to build this bridge to nature connection for people?
I sure feel like I do. We talk about nature and I have a lot of journaling questions. I ask questions each month. And part of it is what animal embodies this time of year? Like the lazy sleeping siesta time. You know, people say cats and other animals, deer, you know, whoever kind of we think of resting during that time of year. And then as an herbalist, I like to ask what plant embodies this time of year. And of course, the plants are all in their different stages, but their herbalism sits in that whole area of rest and healing. So any herb you could put in that category. But as we go around, there are herbs that are used for sleep and herbs that are used for healing, adaptogens that that help the body to heal very generally, and herbs that are used for celebration and for focus and increasing focus. So we kind of talk about that throughout the course as well. It's not an herbalism course, but the ideas come in.
I'm curious what kind of reflections, feedback, results, if you will, you're seeing from people that are going through your trainings.
I would say it varies, and it varies on, you know, how much effort people put into it or how much they are able to, how much time. I'm not very pushy. I'm pretty much a gentle mentor. And my motto is, it's self-care. Do what you can in the moment. We're here to relax and to feel better. We're not here for any other goal than that. So whatever works for you. And my goal is each month to just give a group of ideas that people can weigh and do what they want with. And the people that do seem to read all the materials and come to all the monthly meetings and really integrate it, they seem to really, by the end, have these connections with nature. They talk about their sit spot. They talk about watching the vultures and having connection with specific animals, robins in their yard or different things, and how it's helped them to slow down. I think that's one of the biggest things, is that it helps people to just slow down and not have that intense of a lifestyle, that, you know, to be able to just, yeah, I can still get through day to day without having to be so intense and without having to be everything to everyone.
All right. Well, I understand that you have a course coming up. And obviously this podcast, you might be listening to it long after this course is already open. But my feeling is that Chris will keep offering things, but there's an opportunity here for people. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up for you, Chris, because we'd love for people to find you and check out what you're doing.
So it's starting September 1st. And I will keep registration open through September. September is kind of the introductory month. And each course includes an online, there's a community, it's a Mighty Networks community. And so we're able to have chats and readings. And it takes maybe 2 hours a month to go through all the materials. And what I'd love to see is for people to just set a little time every week to do some of the exercises, the activities, and, you know, think about gratitude, think about, you know, find your sit spot, those things. So if you could dedicate a little bit of time every week, that would be wonderful. A couple hours a month. That's all that's really involved in it. And there are also gift packets. So I send out this package of 9 little bundles that, and you open one up each month, and that there's an herbal tea in each one. And we talk about how it tastes and what, how it makes you feel. And then there's a little activity. So as I was homeschooling my children, it was some Waldorf homeschooling and inspired by Waldorf, at least. So there's a little bit of modeling beeswax and some beeswax candles and different handcraft projects and different items throughout the year. So if you sign up, you may get your gift packet a little bit late if you sign up late, but I'm going to keep it open through September.
Right. And that's self-care through the cycles of nature, creating your own personal habitat. 9-month online interactive course for caregivers of all kinds. So remember, you don't have to be a veterinarian to be part of this. You know, I think if you really think about it, we are all caregivers, aren't we?
Yeah. And I want to say, even if you're not a caregiver, maybe the more self-care that you have really is an act of caring for others, right? Even if it's your friends and family, the more that we care for ourselves, the more kind of natural emergence of caring for others.
Right. And that's the message I'm trying to get across, is that we're all caregivers, whether we recognize it or not. We, you know, the more we can take care of ourselves, the more we can spread that into the community.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for this, Chris. It's been really lovely.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to have all this information in the show notes for anybody who's interested. And again, that's chrisaugust.com, chrisaugust.com. Chris, thank you so much. I really appreciate the work you're doing here to help people get back in touch with caring for themselves so that they can care for their communities.
Now, as I feel into what Chris August is offering, I feel more hopeful about the world. I can feel this calmness spreading in this beautiful caregiving. So thank you so much. We absolutely need it on our planet here at this time. So Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.